Today is June, 16th. This is the year 2020, and it's also episode number 532 of the Apple Context Machine. That is a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, like just a weird dude. I would like to let you know that if you want to get the full story, this is the best intro ever. If you want to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine, and that'll take you to our Facebook group. Our sponsor this week is Clean My Mac X. Later in the show, I'm going to tell you how you can get 5% off Clean My Mac X from MacPaw. And joining me this week is an ACM alumnus, a young man I like to call, and surprisingly, no one else does, Jeff Gamet.
Yeah, what's up with that?
You'd think everybody would call you that. Just me.
You would think.
It's just me.
But I have to say, I'm glad to see that the show is still being run by top men.
Top men. Absolutely. I would like you to know that in no way have I changed the quality of the show since your official departure as co-host as opposed to guest host.
I think that's why I feel so comfortable right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. You should, because, you know, we're two top men doing a top man job, producing top men quality content.
With just as much preparation as I remember from when I was part of the TMO team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 2-3 hours talking about my ridiculous life. And then, you know, Timmons throwing some topics together and hit record.
Right. And you did write them down, right? Because I did not.
This time I actually did. I've got them.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, back in the day, I was always writing them down because I figured that
I couldn't be bothered. And here's the thing, Jeff, since you left, I have to be bothered. It's really annoying.
Oh, I bet.
I don't appreciate that at all. I'm a little cranky about it, but, you know, needs must when the devil drives. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's, I was trying to come up with a good, you're not the boss of me joke. And it just wasn't coming together.
Yep. Fair enough. I have a package at the door. I'm hoping I'll have to sign for it. Really hoping.
Yeah. Well, this is exciting. I can't wait.
The anticipation is a turn on.
Say it. Dude, you know to wait.
I didn't wait long enough. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't.
All right. I'm just going to hope that the package is on my doorstep. Need that in my business, as my grandfather used to say. Used to like playing Michigan Rummy with him and my grandmother. It was a very, very fun Rummy game. And he would draw a card from the up pile, as, you know, many Rummy games have an up pile that you can choose from. And he would say, I need that in my business. And it always tickled me to death.
Now, Michigan Rummy, that's the one that has updog, right?
Don't remember that term. It has been decades since I played it. It's similar to Gin Rummy, but it's a little bit different, I think, in the construction of the hands and the rules for the order of play.
You are the worst at picking up what I put down.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude, updog, man. It's like that game's all about the updog. Is that any better? Explain it, please. I'm like totally lost.
Oh my God. Okay. Everyone else that's listening to the show right now, they're wailing and gnashing their teeth at your expense, Brian.
Yeah, fair enough.
So
this checks out.
Okay. So I said, is that the version that has updog? And you don't know what that is. So you're supposed to say, I don't know what's updog. And then I say, yo, not much.
Oh my goodness. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting cow.
I'm laughing because there's a
interrupting cow.
I'm sorry. Interrupting Moo. Cow. I'm sorry. I got distracted because the sound of a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old from the backseat of a car saying knock, knock. And you know what joke is coming.
Yeah, of course, man.
I taught the joke.
Yeah. So. I love that particular joke. I like, listen, I'm 54. I love that joke. It's hilarious.
It's an awesome joke. Teach 4-year-olds the joke. What's the most important part of comedy? Mm-hmm. And so as soon as the person starts to say, I don't know, that they talk over them and say timing.
Ah, yes. A good one.
And it's really funny because the 4-year-old or 5-year-old has no idea what the joke is.
Okay.
But it gets a laugh every time because, you know, when you teach them how to do it right, I mean, they will nail it every time.
Mm, sure.
And then they love the laugh and it makes the joke even funnier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This all checks out. Boy, I'm really wondering how MacPaw feels about sponsoring this particular episode right about now. Hey, we're going to fix that. We're going to talk about some tech stuff, believe it or not.
You know, I'm sure it was great when ACM had sponsors all the way up until this week.
All the way up until this week. So, Jeff, what do you think is going to happen at WWDC?
I think there will be a lot of people that are really excited about whatever it is that Apple announces. and then there'll be John Keith that tells us why we're all wrong for being excited.
Man, you...
And I love you, John.
You are, like, phoning it in even worse than I ever did.
But I do have some ideas about what I think we could see.
Okay. All right. Let's hear it.
And what the ramifications could be. I'm thinking that these rumors that Apple is going to announce ARM-based Macs is pretty likely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For sure. It's happening. It's real.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. Now, I think the odds of Apple saying, and here's the first model ready for you to buy, 50-50 at best.
No, there's no way. They're not shipping one yet.
Yeah, and see, that's the other side of my 50-50, because, I mean, first, they could surprise us, because Apple loves surprising us. But I think what's more likely is that Apple will announce these new computers, and they will tell us that they've been running these ARM-based Macs for a while now in their own labs, and that the first models with the new chips will come out like this fall, before the end of the year, maybe. And then they need to take care of developers, because developers need to know this now so they can start working on making sure that their apps actually will run on these processors, because it's not going to be as simple as do a checkbox, now it compiles for ARM, even though I'm sure that's what Apple would love everyone to think, because there's going to be a lot that goes on under the hood to make sure that interface elements are working correctly. And there's probably other things that go along with that, but, you know, I'm not a developer, so excuse me, it's easy for me to say, and they just need to reboot the interface elements and then move on. So Apple needs to address that. Now, when they did the transition to Intel processors for Macs, Apple had these custom built machines that they made that developers could get a hold of, and it was like, man, that was so long ago. That was like a lease thing, right? Where
lease or loan? I forget which, but that was actually my question. Wait, mm-hmm. Did you have a summary to that?
No, hit me with your question.
So, I feel like we're going to end up getting a lot more lead time on this announcement than we did the switch over to Intel from PowerPC. And I'm wondering, you know, first of all, Steve's not in charge anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this entire emulation layer that allowed PowerPC code to run on Intel Macs.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked really well. And for that reason, Apple didn't need as much lead time as it would have if there was no emulation layer. Right? Because so, you know, Apple can pre-announce it. And they did pre-announce it, right? It was a little while before that first, I think Dave was noting in one of our morning meetings this week that the first Intel Mac was a PowerBook, wasn't it? He said that it actually didn't resonate with me, actually. First,
I'm not Intel sure.
Mac, I'll make a little sausage here. Apple's transition to Intel processors. Wikipedia, fantastic. Transition marked. Steve Jobs announced Freescale. Blah blah blah. Transition marked Intel Macintosh. The first was the switch. Yeah, okay, right, great. Initial press release, 2008, June 2006. And finished by the end of 2007, but it actually proceeded much more quickly. First generation Intel-based Macintoshes were released January 2006 with Tiger. Steve Jobs announced the last models to switch over in August of 2006. Wow, that was quick. Mac Pro available immediately. Intel Xserve available in October. Xserve servers were available in December. Timeline. June 2005, Apple announces its plan to switch to Intel processors. That was the trusted platform module and a modified PowerMac G5 case to all select and premier members of the Apple Developer Connection. That's what you were talking about, at a price of $999.
Okay.
January, Jobs announces, to give credit to Wikipedia again, this is where I'm reading from, Jobs announces the first two computers in the series, the 15-inch MacBook Pro, as Dave said, and iMac Core Duo. Aha.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so Mac Mini, it was a little bit later in February that also came with an Intel chip, etc. So I guess there was some lead time, about 6 months. June 2005 is when Apple announced it, and then the first devices shipped in January of 2006.
Okay. So my timeline could work. Apple announces next week, and then end of the year-ish, they're rolling out the first computers with their own ARM processors. But in the meantime, how do developers work on these apps and then test them? Because giving them just an emulation environment isn't going to be good enough.
No, not for the heavy duty apps.
Right.
Not for the Photoshops, the Words, the you know, any of the science stuff. MATLAB, LOL. The video production stuff, the video effects stuff, some of the music processing software, including the third-party software that is very important on the Mac, those things are going to need time and real hardware to test on.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean a brand new machine that that developers can get a hold of? Or does it mean an add-in card for the Mac Pro? Or could it be both?
The Mac Pro actually makes sense for the Mac Pro. But, the Mac Pro is not aimed at the developer community. Not really. The Mac Pro is aimed at the at the heavy duty video processing community and maybe the science community.
So that takes us to this crazy idea that I have, which is, you know, this new iMac that's rumored to get announced mm-hmm. at the event. Mm-hmm. Maybe the test platform machine that developers will have access to is actually an ARM-based iMac.
Shipping soon? In your thought?
Available to developers shortly after.
Like October-ish or something.
Yeah, or maybe earlier.
Well, okay, so this the rumors are that Apple, here's the thing, the rumors are, he said, repeating himself, mm-hmm. that the first Mac ARM processors will be ready, and I thought it was mid-2021, which is what set me on this path of wondering if Apple is not going to do the emulation layer this time. And that's why we're getting more lead time. That more lead time would only be the case is if it was a full year out.
I get what you're saying, but I'm having a hard time accepting that there wouldn't be an emulation layer for a little while. Because there are a lot of people that are using Macs in a professional setting. And there's a lot of developers that don't want to have to support multiple platforms if they don't have to.
Or at least to be able to do it on a, you know, more flexible and friendly time frame.
Yes. So we get an emulation layer of some sort.
Well, and to that end, Jeff, Apple has a fantastic roadmap of exactly how to do this kind of transition.
They do. And this time they also have an awesome system in place where they have been able to test a lot of elements that go into having a Mac that's running on an ARM processor. Like, we've been testing it for them already for a while.
You mean Catalyst?
No, but Catalyst is part of the process. Do you remember? I'm sure we had discussions at some point about the iPod Nano and how I've always looked at the iPod Nano. Well, not always, but when I saw the track record, I looked at the iPod Nano as a test bed for technologies to go into future iPods.
Okay.
And so Apple was able to do real world testing on these technologies and these features by selling us at full price a test bed. And so every time a new iPod Nano came out, it was different from the one before because they were testing new stuff.
Well, and Apple experimented on us with their iPhones, right?
Right.
With the switchover, like, you know, like everyone, like, what was it, iOS 11 or 10? If Craig Federighi revealed that Apple like converted everyone's storage device to the new file format and then converted it back during the installation process just to see.
Yes, I do remember that. Oh, you know, I think we were sitting side together at WWDC.
That was at
John Gruber's event.
Thank you, the John Gruber fella.
Yeah, the Gruber guy.
It was at his event where he was interviewing Federighi, and I think it was Schiller that year.
Yeah, Schiller was there. It felt more like he was Federighi's handler.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Okay, so the platform that we have now where Apple's been able to do a lot of testing is mm-hmm. the iPad Pro. And
not running Mac OS, man.
No, not running Mac OS. Testing all of these elements that will go into Mac OS.
What you're saying. And
I'm right.
No, the judges are going, eh.
Well, the judges are wrong because I'm right. And
the elements that need to be tested in macOS are not the kinds of things that Apple has been building into iPadOS. I mean, mind you, the fact that iPadOS and iPhoneOS run on ARM obviously is going to help with this transition. Right? But there are things that Apple needs to do with macOS that aren't already running on ARM, well, they probably are right now, are not being tested in the current version of iPadOS.
I think there's, in retrospect, we will be able to point to a lot of things that we have been testing for Apple
I over the past couple of years.
And right. The most recent element, thank you, the most recent element was the release of the...
I gotta pause. I gotta go ahead and pat you on the back for that and not just let it go. I cannot imagine a better response to someone who is pretending that you said something completely different than what you actually said. I salute you, sir.
Thank you. And getting to hear your laugh was awesome.
Thank you. Well, you've improved my mood today. I appreciate
it. Well, I'm glad. What was I saying? Oh, Magic Keyboard.
Okay.
That's the last piece that I needed to really tell me that Apple has been using iPad Pro as a test bed for a lot of different elements that ultimately become part of an ARM-based Mac. And it's not just about testing the like different code elements. And I'm sure that there's some of that that's been happening, but it's about being able to see how different components are actually working and then getting real world use case data and then adding in the smart keyboard that lets us take an iPad Pro and to a degree turn it into a little desktop computer. They have all of these pieces that they've been testing out over the past couple years at least, and it's all coming together, and once again we are paying to be the test platform for Apple.
No. All right. So here's the thing, man. This is why I hear what you're saying. I respect what you're saying. I mean, you're wrong, but I respect what you're saying. The initial transition from Mac Intel to Mac ARM is going to be a pretty cut and dry transition. It's going to be Mac OS was running on Intel, and now it's running on ARM. And I don't think this is part of the. I think that the iPad Pro and Magic Keyboard are part of the toaster fridge transition. I do not think that Mac on ARM is part of the toaster fridge transition. In other words, the toaster fridge is going to run an iPad OS. It's not going to run it's not going to run on Mac OS.
I agree.
Unless, of course, it runs both.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to run both because Catalyst.
Okay, but Catalyst becomes less of a thing too with Mac on ARM, Mac OS on ARM.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but right now we're in the position where developers can create apps with Catalyst where they can test on ARM because we have an iPad, and they can test on Intel because we have the Mac. So they have a platform where they can work on making sure these apps are working correctly on both processor types. And as I'm saying this, I'm wondering if that's part of their test for, in some way, for an emulation layer.
Now I'm more in your camp on this. That could be the case. That could be the case. And if you go back to the statement I made a few minutes ago, Apple has an exact roadmap of how to do this successfully, right? The transition from PowerPC to Intel was one of the great business success stories of the 2000s, right? From both a technical standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, from an execution standpoint, from a logistical standpoint, and from a customer standpoint, that transition was masterfully handled. I mean, like, it was handled so well, we don't even talk about how well it was handled. That's how well it was handled. And I mean, Apple and Steve and the small team that made Apple at that time, do not get anywhere near enough credit. And I think it's in part because they made it look so gosh darned easy.
Mm-hmm. And I think we'll see the same thing again.
Yeah, and we should. So if that's the case, that means we get an emulation layer of some sort that will allow ARM-based Macs to run Intel code. We already have that in Intel from the standpoint of Catalyst, and I think that's all we'll get for the Intel Macs. I don't think there's going to be an entire emulation layer that allows Intel Macs to run ARM-based macOS code, other than Catalyst.
I agree.
And then we'll see some kind of early release device for developers to get their hands on an ARM-based Mac, just like we saw in 2005. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see the first shipping ARM-based Macs sometime in 2021. And I don't know if it'll be as early. I don't know if it'll be as early as January, because I think that Apple's still working on this stuff. So, it could be more towards the middle, which is what the rumors have been so far.
More towards the middle wouldn't surprise me. But at the same time, beginning of the year wouldn't surprise me either. I mean, this isn't Apple's first time going through this sort of process. So, like we've said, so I could see if everything has been progressing really well, that maybe Apple could release something early in the year. But if they don't, that doesn't mean that they're running behind schedule.
Well, yeah, no, agreed. Agreed. I mean, it's Apple's. Completely agreed. And I think that I imagine this is going to be a good transition. I can't wait to see. I really hope these devices are faster. I hope these devices are faster. I know that they're going to be better integrated into the Mac hardware and software, because we've already seen the amazingly magical things that Apple can do with iPad and iPhone by controlling the processor.
Yeah, I will be surprised if we don't see a performance improvement on the ARM-based Macs. Absolutely surprised.
The biggest question to me is going to be, how many cores does it take? So, for instance, will we still be looking at, 4 and 8 core devices, or 4, 6, and 8 core devices for most things? Or is Apple going to throw a 64 core or 128 core option for Mac Pros at us? Be interesting to see what they do there.
Yeah. Yes.
Really interesting to see. Can you imagine, by the way, iStat menus with 128 cores, and you don't have them consolidated?
You're going to need a bigger display.
Oh, yeah.
I've got this 34-inch wide display on my desk.
Yeah, not big enough.
And, I don't think I'd have enough room to show all those cores. Mm-mm.
That'd be fun, though. That'd be exciting. That'd be exciting. Be pretty cool. I picked up a 2019 iMac in January.
Cool.
And I got the 8-core version. And... even on the 5K iMac display, I did have to consolidate, and I feel a little bit dirty about that. But I have the graph is consolidated. I'm talking about iStat menus, by the way, folks. One of my must-have utilities, kind of like the utility I'm about to talk about from our sponsor. But iStat menus is this great utility, and it gives you all kinds of technical hardware related information about what your Mac is doing, and it sits in your menu bar, and it's just fantastic. So I've got a consolidated graph, but then I have each of the individual processors with a percentage.
Do you use Bartender?
I don't use Bartender.
Dude, just get Bartender and start using it. It will change the way you use your menu bar, and stuff that you've had to make compromises on for seeing information because it's just taking up too much space, that goes away. It's awesome.
Oh, I do need that, because there are some there, like, I want the Adobe menu bar thing gone. I want that gone. I want that dead. I want that killed. It needs to not exist. They need to give me the option of nuking it. Infuriates me that they don't.
Well, get Bartender, because if nothing else, you can at least permanently hide it, so it's just like tucked away inside Bartender.
Don't need a Sketch pull down menu either.
I like Sketch. There you go.
Well, I like Sketch, but I don't need Sketch pull down menu.
Okay, well, you need Bartender.
I do.
So 34 inch display, if I wasn't using Bartender, my menu bar items seriously would go halfway across the screen.
I have no doubt. I have zero doubt about that. All right. So anyway, here's my other must-have utility for me. Clean My Mac X. And it's not Clean My Mac 10, folks. It's Clean My Mac X from MacPaw. They're sponsoring the show. And I love it when a product that I use all the time, the makers sponsor the show. I really, really love that. And that's the case here with Clean My Mac X. I do use it all the time. So the thing about Clean My Mac X is that it will help you keep your system running well. It'll help you keep your storage clean and tidy, and takes care of stuff so that you don't have to. It helps declutter your Mac, your cache, your logs, old mail attachments. They're all scattered throughout your Mac system. Clean My Mac looks for those particular files and offers you ways to delete them that are super easy, very visual, and informative, so you're not worried about what you're actually deleting. And this can save you gigabytes of space, and I have absolutely done it. Like, before I bought my new Mac and I was short on storage, I had to run Clean My Mac X all the time so that I could actually have enough storage to actually keep functioning on my old Mac. Another superpower of Clean My Mac X is its ability to handle all performance-draining processes on your Mac. Its optimization feature is way more straightforward than the built-in activity monitor. And Clean My Mac X gives you more control over apps and their files. You can find out what apps and programs you have on your Mac. You can uninstall the ones you don't need. And when it comes to optimizing your Mac system, Clean My Mac X is also extremely good at that. It will push all the unused bits of memory, removes temporary files, and performs other maintenance tasks to unleash your Mac's full potential. I use this software. I love this software. I have the software on every Mac that I own and run. I absolutely and positively recommend it and give it my full personal endorsement. You can visit MacPaw.com/podcast because you're listening to my show. And you can use that address, that's MacPaw.com/podcast, to download Clean My Mac X today. And use coupon code ACM2020 to receive 5% off. Now, when you get to MacPaw.com/podcast, you can click the Buy Now button. And you can scroll to the bottom of your screen, and that's where you enter the code. And do that before you complete the purchase. That's how you save the 5%. Clean My Mac X is also now available in the Apple App Store. But if you want that discount, you're going to have to go to MacPaw.com/podcast. Again, I want to thank MacPaw for sponsoring the show. And I want to thank Clean My Mac X for being awesome. Jeff Gamet.
Brian Chaffin.
You were, when you were working for us full time, you, sir, were generally speaking our automation dude. Home automation, smart home stuff.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
And before the show, in between talking about my ridiculous life, you like briefly mentioned something about HomePod, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. We'll talk about it on the show. Now, back to my ridiculous life. I think that's how the conversation went. And but it was something about
that sounds about right.
Sounds about right. Yeah, something about HomePods. I don't know, blah, 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 HomePods. That's all I remember.
Blah, 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 HomePods. But no, let's talk about Brian, blah, blah, blah. No, wait, HomePods. Yes, what I said was something to the effect of, I've come to the realization that my HomePod is an expensive but good-sounding music streaming device and kitchen timer.
So you're saying that as an insult?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yes, because now how about if I say it as a statement of disappointment? Because I really wanted my HomePod to be so much more for me.
Sure.
And in all fairness, I have to say it is my my HomeKit bridge, because Apple took away the ability to have two separate Apple IDs on an Apple TV. So, and I have one Apple ID for my for all of my media content, and a different one that I use for iCloud and HomeKit. Because Apple still doesn't have a way for us to merge Apple IDs.
Well, how did that happen in the first place? How'd you get wind up with using two different IDs to begin with?
Well, I actually have four IDs, but two that I use all the time. So it starts with iTools. Do you remember that?
I do.
And so we had an iTools ID. And then as things progressed, then we had whatever they called it after iTools. But
It was .Mac after.
.Mac, yes. So then we had our .Mac ID.
Yeah.
And the iTools ID and the .Mac ID, there were compatibility issues. So to be able to do all of the iCloud stuff that I was doing, I needed to have a new Apple ID. But I'd already been purchasing all of my content under the ID that I set up originally from iTools. So I now had two Apple IDs that I needed to use all the time. And that's just the way it stayed, because I'd already purchased a bunch of content. I wasn't going to rebuy it. And so to this day, I have two Apple IDs that I use on a regular basis just for all of my daily stuff.
And you can't merge.
And you cannot merge Apple IDs.
And you've called AppleCare to ask.
Oh, this is a long-standing, well-known problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Now, since we're going down this tangent,
sure,
it gets better, because those old Apple IDs that started life through iTools don't support two-factor authentication.
Mine does.
No, it doesn't. It supports two-step authentication.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, it's two-step authentication.
And that became a problem for me, because I also have Apple developer account.
Yeah.
And I got locked out of it because I couldn't set up two-factor authentication on my Apple ID. Apple actually has a whole process in place for all those people that can't set up two-factor authentication for their developer account. Ah. It's absolutely crazy. But anyhow,
I beg to differ. It just works. That's we know this because we were told this.
Go ahead. Right.
Go ahead, please.
Right. Okay. So that takes us back to my complaint about my Apple TV, which is that I can't use it as a HomeKit bridge, because I can't have the right Apple ID on it.
Because that's where you have your media.
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
So anyhow, that's the long roundabout way to why my HomePod is actually my HomeKit bridge. but it's used primarily to set timers when I'm cooking and to play music. There are a couple smart home commands that I give it, like at the end of the day when I'm ready to go to bed, I give it my "Hey, S Lady, good night" command, mm-hmm. and then it sets all my hue lights and yeah. It does all this stuff. And the reason that's there and never migrated over to the A Lady machine was because it's actually more of a pain to set up what I wanted there, and I already had it set up on HomeKit, so I left it.
Take it that moving your HomeKit stuff to your older media account is not a palatable option to you?
No, because then
you can't do the 2FA.
Well, there's or that. Not thought about but that? No, I've thought about it. But if I move that over, then all the other stuff that goes along with that, like my iCloud account, all of that stuff needs to move too. Mm. And there's so much that's set up under the newer Apple ID that moving it to the older one would be just as much of a problem for me as trying to deal with all of the media that I have and moving it over. Yeah, Apple really needs to fix this.
That does make sense. And so yeah. Why what is all right, so you say that the only thing you're using it for is some timer issues. Like, set a timer mm-hmm. for me. And
mm-hmm. and streaming music.
Streaming music. So what else would you do with it? Like, what are you saying that you're using Amazon's A Lady product to in ways that are different?
Yeah, I'm using the A Lady for all of my smart home control for spoken commands.
I thought you said you're using your HomePod for that.
No.
Well, some of your automation stuff is set up.
I have a couple things set up.
Why don't you move those to the Amazon A Lady?
Well, moving over the one for good night.
Yeah.
That's just a case of me being lazy and not taking the time to set up all the lights and the thermostat. And there's a bunch of stuff that I have that happens when I give that one command.
And are they Alexa compatible and HomeKit compatible?
Yes. So I could move that over to the A Lady. I just haven't.
Shocked that you haven't.
It's the one. It's just I totally get it. I appreciate your shock. It's just been absolute laziness.
Yeah, come on, man. That's like a 20-minute task at best. Just set up those devices, new devices on the A Lady, and delete them.
All those devices are set up on the A Lady. It's just setting up the routine is what it would be called on the A Lady. My mistake.
It's a 22-minute operation.
Yeah.
Not 20 minutes. I know. It would take 22 minutes. I know.
Hey, I fully accept that humans are complicated animals and there's some cognitive dissonance happening here. I've come to terms with that and I'm okay with it. But the thing is, what I found is that talking to the A Lady has been much more reliable for voice commands for smart home control than talking to my HomePod.
Well, that's interesting to me because me and the S Lady have come to an understanding.
Uh-huh.
And she tends to do what I want. I don't have to repeat stuff. And when I do have to repeat stuff, it's because like, I remember recently I was sitting on my bed and then I gave, I was probably going to bed or something. And I gave the, my lights out command and which shuts everything down in my house. And I specifically, I didn't do it on purpose, but I realized that I was speaking to the floor. And I also may have had some clothes piled up kind of in front of my HomePod. maybe it's the memory is a little bit hazy. My point is this, actually, maybe they were actually stacked like beside the, regardless, the fact that she didn't hear me was acoustical in nature versus understanding. And there was like, there was a sort of training period, right? I used to, when I would say lights out, the way I would say it, I would sometimes get a, oh, I'm just not doing anything. I have an Australian accent, and apparently it's gone a little bit cockney, at least when I tell it on set for my...
So your HomePod's migrating. That's yeah. Okay.
Hello, mate! That's my, yeah, it's my Australian accent. But I used to get it's that a little that bit, but now I don't get that anymore. And it could be because she's trained me to say it differently without me thinking about it. Or it could be that either Apple has improved the understanding or that there's enough learning about what I'm saying and what I actually want that it works.
Okay, I can appreciate that. Yeah. All right, here's another problem that I'm having. And this, by the way, the problems that I'm having, these are things Apple can address without new hardware. It's just a matter of getting it right in the software, and then I would actually move all my voice commands to the HomePod, or to Siri at that point. But giving voice commands to the S Lady has become more and more frustrating over the past year, especially. Because that whole thing that Craig Federighi told us about, where all your devices that can hear the and process S-Lady commands mm-hmm. will talk to each other mm-hmm. and decide which is the right one mm-hmm. to handle whatever the command is, mm-hmm. that's gone to hell for me.
Oh, it works really well for me.
It's horrible for me. Like, to the point that I don't want to talk to the S-Lady because the wrong device is going to handle the command. So, for example, I'm playing music on the HomePod, mm. and I want it to be louder or quieter. Mm. Mm. Hey, S-Lady, louder. Mm. And it's the only device that's actually doing anything at that moment. And it can't get the context. And oftentimes my iPhone in the other room will tell me okay and turn up its own volume, even though it's not doing anything. And this is a really common thing for me. And so addressing things like that would make me more likely to want to talk to the HomePod all the time, because I wouldn't be having the frustration of then having to tell some other device to stop doing what it's doing and then walk over to the HomePod and talk directly into it to get it to do what I want. And while I'm sitting here bagging on the HomePod, please don't think that my A-Lady is the bomb, because right now... I've done enough troubleshooting to realize to get the A-Lady to properly recognize the Wemo smart switch that's in my bedroom again, because A-Lady has decided that the Hue light bulb and the lamp in the bedroom is what I want to turn on and off mm-hmm. when I tell it to turn on or off the Wemo switch. I actually have to remove all the Wemo devices from A-Lady, add them back in, and reset them all up from scratch.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I can I see why you keep your stuff over there. All right, snark aside. Mm-hmm. Again, back in my bedroom, I've mm-hmm. got a regular iPad. I've got an iPhone. I've got an Apple Watch on. I've got my iPad Pro. and I've got a HomePod. At least at the end of the night. Right? Are you with me, or at the end of the day? And
yeah, I'm with you.
If I speak a command, my HomePod answers. Yeah, the flip side is I would say 1% of the time, maybe less than 1% of the time, I'll have my iPhone or iPad answer instead of the HomePod in that situation. And I do
that sounds wonderful.
Do sometimes
I love that.
Have like if you know I'm in the kitchen and I'll speak a command and maybe the HomePod in my bed. I have like a lot of HomePods in a relatively small home. Maybe my bedroom HomePod will respond, or maybe it'll be one of the ones in the living room, or maybe it'll be my office one. But it's usually going to be the office one. And that's about the closest I've come to experiencing the problems that you're describing.
I'm glad you're not having the problems that I'm having, because it's horribly frustrating. I mean, the bottom line is the whole smart home voice control thing is still straight up a hot mess. That has not changed over the past couple of years. Part of my frustration comes from I'm wanting these products to all work together better than they currently do. I'm having a moment of impatience with my smart home technology.
Yeah, fair enough.
And so much so that while I want to have whole home music, or well, in my case, whole apartment music, mm-hmm. and the HomePod would be perfect for that because I never invested in Sonos.
Yeah,
but I have a HomePod.
Yeah,
a second HomePod.
Yeah,
I mean that. I know how well that would work, and it would be awesome. Yet, because of the frustration that I have, I don't want to spend that much money on another HomePod. So instead, I have external speakers plugged into an A-Lady in the bedroom, and then I have my A-Lady and an A-Lady soundbar in the living room. And so I set up a location or a scene, I forgot what it's called in A-Lady, but anyhow, a group that's called Everywhere, and it has all of the echoes, so I can say, A-Lady, play jazz everywhere, and then it kicks everything on, and I now have a poor man Sonos.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as great as if it were two HomePods, but at the same time, until I see the type of improvements that I want to see, which it really comes down to reliability. Once I see the reliability improvements, then I would take all of this stuff that I've set up on the A-Lady and move it over to HomeKit again. Because you remember, I used to have everything in HomeKit. And then I had a problem, which it was long enough ago that, oh yeah, it was long enough ago that I wrote a scathing article about it.
Yeah.
For TMO.
Yeah.
About how everything went south really bad. And the only fix was for me to completely kill all of HomeKit setup and start from scratch.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And you know that my big complaint is still, and I mention this at every opportunity because Brian, is that Apple TV doesn't remember that I want my gosh darned audio to go through my HomePods. Neither of them. Like yeah. They both forget it all the time.
Yeah, that's stupid. That shouldn't be an issue.
And one more thing on that. It's so, I mean, like, it's bad enough. It's bad. Okay. It sometimes forgets when I haven't made any changes. To wit, let's say I'm sitting here at my desk. I have an Apple TV on my desk. I have an iMac on my desk. Let's say I decide to pump the audio from my iMac through the HomePod.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's almost understandable that the Apple TV could forget that, you know, it's like, well, oh, you changed the setting. So now I'm just going to go back to the default. It shouldn't. It shouldn't happen then, actually. It should, like, Apple TV should still go, like, oh, I see. Now, your HomePod's not doing anything, but I see you were using it for something else. But I also see that you've always played audio from me through there, so I'm just going to go ahead and do that. I'm just going to go ahead and do that for you, because it's clear that that's what you want. Okay, it shouldn't do that. But it will also forget when I have not made any changes. It'll just, I was watching TV yesterday, haven't played any music in the living room. I haven't played any music. I didn't pump anything through the living room HomePods. I didn't even select them briefly. I didn't do anything. And then today, just like, you know, like volumes or is going through my TV speakers. What the crap is that about? I mean, like, the freaking Apple TV should freaking remember that it should know that your sound source for watching video content is probably going to remain static. Your desired sound source.
I agree completely.
This is completely obvious and it infuriates me.
Now, okay, so the salt in the wound for that is that my Apple TV remembers that my Polk soundbar is where audio goes to. That's wired. So it can remember for that. Why can't it remember for your AirPlay, HomePods?
For the AirPlay, the technology that Apple controls?
Yeah.
Every aspect of.
Granted, I'm not a developer. But it sure seems to me
it's an AirPlay
issue. Must be a plist file for AirPlay that tells it, hey, you what devices you're using, or at least for sound out. So why can't it write to that plist file always default to HomePod?
Yeah, it'd be one thing if you had music playing on a HomePod when you turned on your TV. That would be one thing.
Yeah, but they've already addressed that, because if you're going the other way, let's say you already have content playing through the HomePod from your Apple TV, and you go to send something, say, to the Apple TV or to the HomePod, you get a dialogue on your device saying something to the effect of, there's something already playing. Do you want to take over anyhow?
Right.
So let's say there's music playing on your HomePod. You turn on your Apple TV. Now your Apple TV pops up a thing and it says, hey, there's music already playing on the HomePod. Do you want me to take it over anyhow?
Yeah. Agreed.
So what I see is that I have brought you down to my level of disappointment with a HomePod, and I'm sorry about that.
No, I actually like the TV thing infuriates me. I mean, like, listeners are probably like, oh, dude, stop the TV thing. And it just makes me so mad. And I think that Apple needs to be hammered on this until they fix it. But in general, I do love my HomePods. I love speaking to the air, which I do. I've got too many HomePods in my house. I can do that whenever I want. Don't have one in the kitchen, but, you know, I've got enough HomePods listening that I can speak for my kitchen and have stuff done. And that's great. I certainly like the sound quality. I certainly do the kitchen timer, and I get the sort of backhanded, you know, not even a compliment, but the backhanded comment that you're making with that. I get a lot of forecasts through my HomePod for whatever that's worth.
Okay. I will every now and then ask my HomePod for the weather or the temperature.
Yeah.
Usually I just say, what's the temperature? And then it gives you the whole forecast.
Well, I've got a widget on my Apple Watch for the temperature, but I want the forecast. I want to know, I want to know if, you know, just exactly how cold it's going to get tonight so I can figure out if I'm going to turn my AC on or open the window.
Sure, I get that. And actually, I have dark sky on my Apple Watch, so I have the complication for that. Yeah. And yet, sometimes I'm too lazy to lift my wrist up to my face to look at that. And so I'll say, hey, S-Lady, what's the temperature? I know that you're getting the temperature every single time from weather.com. You don't have to tell me every single time.
Apple should pay enough that we don't have to hear that.
I agree.
Because I do not care, and nor do I need to know. Plus, by the way, weather.com is getting that information from the federal government. So screw weather.com.
Yeah, there you go. All right, here's a couple other things.
Don't get me wrong.
These are all software fixable.
Weather.com is processing that information, right? They are making use of the raw data that they're getting from the federal government. But regardless, Apple should pay enough that we don't ever have to hear that. That's ridiculous. Go ahead.
I agree. All right. It's time to take the requirement to say hey away from triggering S-Lady. Because it feels really weird now and kind of stilted and awkward, especially when I can talk to the A lady, which is sitting in the same room, and I don't have to say hey before I do that. Now, the other thing.
It doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me. I get that it bothers you. I respect that. Does not bother me.
You see, I want to be able to talk more conversationally with these devices. And I feel like even though a lot of it is happening because of the way I constructed commands, I feel like my conversation or my speaking to the A lady is much more conversational. And the other thing is I can gang up stuff when I talk to the A lady. So I can tell it to turn on the living room lights and then it will continue to listen. And without having to say my trigger word, I can now give it another command and another command and another command. Why can't I do that with the S lady? And even more so, why can't I, excuse me, gang these up where I say, hey, S lady, turn on the lights and set them to 50%.
Agreed. Yeah, I want to be able to say, turn on the front porch light and the back porch light.
Right.
And I can't, the way I've got things set up, I cannot do that. I mean, I guess the workaround, the John Martellaro, I don't mind lifting my wrist up workaround would be to create a group of both porch lights.
Yes.
But that I wish I could do what you just said, which is, you know, do this and that.
Right. Or how about if I want to turn on the living room lights and change the temperature on the thermostat? Or maybe next time it's I want to turn on the office lights and turn off the back porch light. So having the groups, how many groups do I need to make to make that work? These are things that are bugging me, not just about S-Lady, but about smart home voice control in general. It feels to me, as the guy that's not having to develop any of this, that we've had enough time since S-Lady came out that even if Apple hasn't gotten us to that point, Amazon or Google should have. S-Lady's what, 10 years old now?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, older because it was in development for years.
Right.
Okay, watch me bring it home. You're about to see a true professional.
I'm sitting down. I'm ready.
True professional at work. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Brian.
The thing is I think we're going to probably end up seeing at least some of these issues address next week at WWDC. I think that Apple's going to end up pushing HomePod and Siri forward during next week's developer-related announcements.
Man, that was so good.
I mean, the whole rest of the show was garbage. But that was some pro-level stuff right there.
You know, I'm feeling like the whole HomePod and S-Lady discussion and smart home discussion that we've had was simply the build up so that you could knock that one right out of the park.
God, man, I am cool. I am so absolutely cool. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Here's the funny thing. We had three topics today. We got and I was like, yeah.
And you were saying it'll be a short show.
Yeah, I'm cool if it goes short, Jeff. I'm totally cool if it goes short. We're at 1 hour and 5 minutes. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question about the show, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass was recorded by Boom, just for TMO. And Jeff, thank you very much for joining us.
We
appreciate you joining us today, Jeff.
This has been a lot of fun.
It was, man. Always love talking to your brother. Absolutely missed you. And I want to thank Clean My Mac X and Mac Paul for sponsoring us. Make sure you go to the URL, which is macpaw.com/podcast. Top man here. To download Clean My Mac X and use coupon code ACM2020 to receive 5% off. Appreciate them sponsoring. And that is all for this week.